Hey guys, and welcome to this week's episode at the Dance Podcast, where we are inspired by big dreams, big letdowns, and authentic conversations with some of the world's most successful dancers, teachers, choreographers, and industry leaders. Okay, before we get going into this week's episode, I want to give a big shout out to JustMusicInDance.com. Justin Stadnick, one of our prior guests, has created a music editing company dedicated to supporting and enhancing a choreographer's vision. Justin can take any song and add accents and enhancements to your tracks, giving the piece a customized, unique sound for the show pieces. He also does edits, mashups, swear removal faster than I could ever attempt. And the best part, Justin is giving the Dance Podcast listeners 20% extra time when you purchase a package. So go to justmusicindance.com/thedancepodcast and reap all of the amazing rewards of having a music editor on call. All right, so what do you do when you don't feel like you fit the norms? Maybe that you're not the right look for the moment, or you're not fitting into the trends. Or what do you do when you lose your dance mojo and you start getting so hard on yourself that it's hard to even get to class? Once a contemporary dancer and now a fitness and belly dance entrepreneur, Orit shares her dance story and how she took her differences and made them a successful career. She has been featured on NBC, ABC, CBS, and CNN, sharing her love of dance and her words of wisdom to the world. We talk about what it's like to be an entrepreneur and how many times she wanted to throw in the towel, and what that one magic piece was for her that allowed her to persevere through entrepreneurialism and really take her career in directions she could have never imagined. I hope you enjoy Orit. Welcome to the Dance Podcast.
Thank you.
We are so happy to have you, Orit.
Hey, so stoked. Thanks.
You and I connected over email because you had been listening. And so we had a nice little chat of getting to know each other. And there were so many pieces about your story that I know will resonate with so many different listeners. So I'm curious if you can dive in a little bit to what that transition into the professional dance world was for you.
Okay. I knew from age six that I've always wanted to be a dancer. I just knew. And I took a lot of dance classes, you know, at local studios growing up. And I then majored in dance in college. I got my, have my BFA in dance. And I knew after college, I wanted to go to New York to dance professionally. And I am from New York. So that was just like a no-brainer for me, a seamless transition for me. And what was it like? Well, being a big fish in a small pond in college, you know, just, you know, people always telling me, oh, you're so talented. I can see you dancing with so-and-so and that company, whatever. Wow. Going out into the dance world in New York, in the contemporary dance world, that was tough because everybody was great. And so, you know, I kept taking classes. I took classes at Ailey, at Trisha Brown, Broadway Dance Center, Steps on Broadway. So it was a bit challenging. And then I started to audition and I noticed that, well, in the 90s, when I was a contemporary dancer, I just was not the right look that people wanted. And then it was about, you know, fitting the costume, being a certain weight, having a certain look, and so on and so forth. So it was really challenging for me. And so when I went, a lot of the times when I auditioned, many times the director would say, hey, Orit, we really like your technique. We think you're a wonderful dancer, but it's just not right for the show. But I know another director or choreographer that may be interested in you. And I heard that quite a few times, contacted that director, and just nothing ever came to fruition.
And I want to interject.
Yes.
Can you describe yourself? Because it was when you described yourself to me that I got the biggest kick out of it. So for you, when you were talking about necessarily not looking the part or being the right height, what is your sort of demographic, or how do you describe yourself?
Oh, gosh. First of all, I'm short. I'm super short. I'm only 4'10". I'm brown. I've got curves. You know, I have a very mesomorphic build. Not that I'm huge, but, you know, I've got a strong build. Yeah. And that was a build that people didn't want back in the day. But when I found out about Arnie Zane and Bill T. Jones, that they loved using dancers who are just regular bodies, but strong. I was so into that. And then also when really avant-garde choreographers came up in, like, let's say we called it like the Lower East Side choreographers, where they were doing avant-garde stuff like women lifting women lifting men lifting men. Like, that was kind of new. And I was like, I was really into that because I had that build where I can really, like, just, I was low to the ground. I could bend my knees. I can lift people with, of course, help with other people. But I know, it just fit me, but that didn't pay the bills, you know?
Super artsy, so, lots of fun.
Yes.
Doesn't make rent.
Exactly.
Exactly. Got it. So how did you make rent? How were you able to navigate those waters?
So what I did was I started to teach fitness because it is performance oriented and I'm going to be in the gym anyway. So might as well get paid for it. And you make more money in the gym because the fitness industry is much bigger than the dance industry.
It's funny. I that's literally how I started teaching bar is I loved doing it. I don't want to pay for it. Great. I'll teach it a few times a week and then I'll also be able to take it like unlimited. I loved what you said about these teachers and these directors seeing something in you, thinking, oh man, that I can totally see you dancing on this stage and I can totally see you working with these people. Because even as you said that, it took me back into that sort of teenage stage where I heard some of that. And as much as it was encouraging, because you're thinking, okay, they see something in me that I'm allowed to work or that I will work, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that is I think that it distorted my expectations. Did you sort of feel that upon reflecting, or have you ever thought about that, about how it affected your expectations of your career?
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Even though people said that I was good enough, but I didn't look the part, the fact that I still couldn't get steady work, I mean, I had some work here and there, it was pretty deflating, you know? And I mean, I didn't get directors saying that, you know, I was great all the time. And in fact, like sometimes I would get such bad rejections. Like, for example, if I may say, I went into a Broadway audition, of course, non-union work. And when I went up to give them my, at that time, is your 8x10 photo and then your resume on the back, the person taking the resume said, sorry, but Annie's down the road, meaning I was way too short. And plus Annie wasn't happening at that time, but it was just sort of an expression like, you're way too short. Don't waste your time.
You look like a kid. Bye.
Yeah.
And in true New York fashion, just direct and
exactly.
Insulting. Great.
I felt like I was upset, but you know what? They didn't waste my time, which is kind of cool.
True. Yeah. I remember Jeff Amsden. He had come in and taught some summer workshops. And at that point he had said to me, you should go check out Hubbard in Chicago. So to me, that was like, cool. I had no idea what he was talking about. there weren't websites. That was so out of the realm, and especially Canada versus the States at that time. No idea what he was talking about, but it was like that reassuring mentor that says like, you've got this. And then you step out into the world and you start to flail a little bit or a lot.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you sharing that because I think that as teachers and mentors, we do that a lot. We're like, you got this, I can see it, blah, blah, blah. But so quickly is ignored the actual steps or the application in order to make that happen. You know, so it's like you get this idea like, oh, it's going to happen.
Yeah. And so I had that idea that it's going to happen. And when it didn't, like I told you, I was felt very like deflated and defeated too. And so I stopped going to class. I lost my mojo for keeping up with my technique. And I just stayed with fitness because that was bringing me in the money. My classes were packed. People loved me. I always, you know, always got positive reinforcement all the time. And so why not stay in fitness?
So when you went into the fitness world, because that, I feel like a lot of dancers, that is an absolutely legitimate way to keep your body in shape, to keep the money coming in. What were the things that you noticed within the dance world and the fitness world very quickly? Like, what were the things that the politics, the realities, how did that look at that time?
Yeah, there are politics in fitness. Well, like I said, with dance, I didn't look the part. Same with fitness, I came to realize. In the 90s, being a fitness instructor was a little different. It was about becoming a fitness celebrity and how many people you can pack in your class. And it also was how you looked as well. Not like now where it's about nurturing your client, nurturing your student, being there for the student. It's not about the teacher getting the workout. It's about giving the student the workout. So I was working at New York sports clubs in the late 90s, and this certain club was really, really booming, and they had like multiple classes at the same time. And they had two step classes. I was teaching one, and there was someone else teaching next door another one. And perfect example of what I mean, not looking the part. He was a beautiful, tall, black man, flamboyant. He was just absolutely gorgeous man, and all the women wanted to do step behind him, you know? And me, I hardly got people, maybe a handful of people. So it was just, again, I felt defeated, I felt deflated, I felt everything. So I just like, God, I can't get a break here. I feel like I'm a really good teacher, I'm seasoned. What's up with me? Until one day when I had a staff meeting at Gold's Gym on 54th Street, and he said, we need to bring in more numbers into all the classes, and I need your help, guys. You guys have to think of really creative classes. Cool. And so I immediately rose my hand and I said, belly dance fitness. I just like, I don't know. It wasn't me raising my hand. Someone did it for me, something. And I said, belly dance fitness. And my director said, yes, you're going to teach next week. And I'm like, oh man, no way. So, but the reason why I rose my hand was because belly dance is part of my culture. And I remembered that it was about no judgments. It wasn't about how you look. It's about how you felt. And it's about what you portrayed when you were dancing. And I was so tired then, teaching all these trendy workouts, not looking the part, feeling so just so tired by the end of the week. And I was just craving dance again. So I immediately thought belly dance fitness, even though I hated it growing up. I hated the music. I hated the dance. I just don't know what. Someone just made me raise my hand.
So why did you hate it? Knowing that you were a dancer, that it was part of your culture, that you're like, your grandparents, your moms, like everybody probably just partakes in that celebration of what it was.
That's a great question. You know what it is? I think growing up, I grew up in New York. My early life was on Long Island. Wasn't a very diverse area. So I was the 1% minority who was ethnic. 1% minority who was probably Jewish. And I didn't look like anybody else. I wouldn't have light skin, blonde hair. I didn't celebrate Christmas. I was always different. And I don't know, I guess growing up, I didn't like the traditional stuff. I just wanted to be like somebody else, you know? So I think that's why. But as I got older, I really began to appreciate the art.
This idea of not being accepted and not belonging and being the different one, you've mentioned it a few times, and I'm curious now, how would you have shifted that perspective, knowing what you know now, to help yourself in those, you know, when you're feeling anxious and frustrated and depressed about maybe not fitting a certain mold? What would you have either told yourself sooner or done differently to shift some of those beliefs that you don't belong or that you're not accepted?
That's a great question. I think what would have helped me is, honestly, getting into belly dancing sooner. Really?
Really?
Yes, I really think so. Because belly dance has really helped me love my body now. I think if I just stop that negative chatter in my brain about my traditions and my indigenous art, I think that would have really helped me. Because I'm telling you, that belly dance is what got me out of that rut about my body. That and then just people telling me or saying to myself that everybody's beautiful. You are beautiful. Just hearing that all the time would have helped.
When it comes to that idea of the negative chatter in your head, because we all have it, and it doesn't matter when or where or what we are doing, the little chatter can start at any time. For you, what helps quiet the negative chatter? Or come back to the place of, I hear you and I'm going to move on anyway. knowing that you were hearing it at Gold's Gym when you had three people and he had 30 or whatever that was? What helps you with the negative chatter?
Back then, as far as helping with the negative chatter, was telling myself that I know that I was a good teacher, that I knew I was good at it, you know? Now, what helps me with the negative chatter is my accomplishments, what I've been able to do, and knowing like, hey, you know, get that crap out of your head, you know, look what I've done so far, you know, I've done this and this, and with my body was the same then.
Yes.
So that's
remove
what helps
a lot
me.
Of the conditions.
Yes.
Yeah. We forget how, I don't know why this happens, but even when somebody asks, you know, me to write my bio or some, you know, you have to write your bio when you do a job or whatever it is. And I don't know why, sometimes it is so hard to write about ourselves and recognize the accomplishments. We're just so used to living in what we're doing. And we've, you know, if you're a big goal-oriented person or an overachiever, there's always a million things on your plate that you're like, well, yeah, that's fine that I did that, but I'm going up there. Like I got more work to do.
Right.
So I love that piece of just taking a moment and just recognize all the good stuff.
Exactly.
So, okay. So you raised your hand to teach belly dance fitness next week, much to your surprise. So what did you do from there, from that meeting?
Well, I took as many belly dance classes that I could take. But this was amazing. It was an amazing research for me. Although, you know, I was brought up with that, with belly dance being part of my culture and knowing fitness, it was very interesting being in these belly dance classes. Teachers were teaching via the mimicking process. Follow me and then you do, without much explanation. It may be different now. I'm just speaking in terms of my experience. And I was very frustrated because here I am coming with a school of thought from contemporary dance. A director is very structured. They tell you what to do exactly. They watch you and correct you. Coming from fitness, same idea. You're teaching a very structured class. You watch your students, you correct them, and you make sure it's safe. Here I am in a belly dance class. They're not doing any of that. So that was challenging for me. It was also challenging for me when I asked teachers to break it down and they couldn't. You know, like one teacher said, oh, this one specific move called a grapevine and you're shimming your hips at the same time. She goes, oh, you just shake your butt. Well, that could mean something different to everybody, you know? And here I am trying to shake my butt and move my feet at the same time. And I look like an idiot. And she's like, oh yeah, that's it. No, it's not. So I had to really figure it out anatomically and methodically what exactly is happening. And so then when I went back to fitness, I noticed, oh my gosh, you know, when I went back to the clubs, I noticed there were dance fitness was starting to come up a little bit, and specifically Latin dance. And I noticed that the directors at the gyms were hiring ballroom dancers to teach Latin fitness. So now here's another thing. Here comes a dancer teaching fitness enthusiasts. And so they're teaching it like a dance class where it's stop, go. So you're not keeping the flow of the class, so they're not getting a cardio workout. They're not structuring it like a fitness class where you have a warm up and then a peak and then a cool down. And they're just like, just not breaking things down. So here was another problem with asking dancers to teach fitness. I was like, what's the common denominator here? And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to fix this. I'm going to teach belly dance with structure, with breakdown, with flow, with cueing, and structured as a fitness class. And can I just tell you, Lauren, it was a hit because finally people could get it.
Yes. So in these moments where you found this new zest for belly dance and what you are creating within that, did you have moments where you missed the dance world in the more, you know, contemporary sense? Or was there a process of needing to like let that dream go? How was that for you in like expectations and dreams?
I did not miss it at all, because here's the thing. So although I created a fitness belly dance format, but I was able now to add my own contemporary style to it, to add some contemporary dance, to add some of that technique. Yeah. And I feel as a competitive belly dancer. I was a competitive belly dancer in the early 2000, 2004 to 2007.
I did not know there was competitions.
Oh, yes, ma'am, they are.
Right on.
Yeah. And I feel like I was giving something different. Although I was doing somewhat traditional belly dance, but I was adding my own contemporary flair. And that was different. That was different for the judges. Although I wasn't making it contemporary dance. It was still Egyptian style dance, but with a little pizzazz, if you will. And that, I'm telling you, I didn't look back. That was my way of adding my contemporary dance to belly dance. So my first love, and with belly dance, that is all about accepting who you are. And I'm like, wow, what a perfect match that is for me.
Even yesterday, I took a hip hop class. And she had brought in some of her ballroom experiences. I mean, she would just, you know, she had taken class. And then you start to look at all of these, I don't know, it's like crossbreeding of dance. Nothing is just in a box anymore. And what I find so inspirational about your story is that so many of, I say us, but just so many dancers are so set on what they think the career should look like or where they're supposed to fit in the community. And you rolled that one out, but then were able to like transform and make something entirely new that didn't exist before. And that is the piece that I think all of us can really take from.
Absolutely.
The dance podcast didn't exist before either.
Dancers can think out of the box. It can happen. It can work. And you can make a living on that.
Mm-hmm. So your belly dance classes are like selling out. It's a hit. Now what? Because one of the tricky things about being a fitness instructor or a dance teacher is that you're only getting paid for when your butt is shaken in that class. So all your class prep time, getting there early, staying there late, like that's not paid for. So I can only imagine, like, how many belly dance classes were you teaching?
I was probably teaching like 1 to 2 a day, but also, you know, was supplementing with some traditional fitness classes as well. But once I saw that my belly dance fitness class was becoming popular, I was like, well, I got something here. So I was ready, boom, to become an entrepreneur. So what I did is I trademarked it. I called it Sharkey, the belly dance workout. I then got it accredited by 2 top fitness associations to prove that this format is fitness, which was very hard back then to prove to these fitness associations that belly dance can be fitness, but I got it done. And then 2 years after that, I created my own manual, and now I started to train people in my format. And then I took my training online, and now it's done all online. And now I mentor about 100 instructors.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible. And especially for me, because I know that this was many years ago, right? Like online fitness. Yeah, totally. No. Probably when you started, that wasn't really a thing quite like it is now.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So what were some of your biggest takeaways, given that you made that conscious decision to become an entrepreneur, to build a product or, you know, or a curriculum? What are the things that surprised you most stepping in now to entrepreneurialism?
How hard it was. There were so many times I wanted to throw in the towel and just end it. It was very hard being an artist and becoming a businesswoman. I made a lot of expensive mistakes. Back then, there was no blueprint on how to create a company. Now, there's all this free information out there on how to get incorporated, registered as a business, how to write a business plan, how to set up your website. Everything was expensive back then. And I'm talking about 2002. Not anymore. Now anybody and their cousin can do it. So that was one realization that about how hard it was. But I stuck with it because something in me said, this is something.
Do you mind giving an example of one of those really expensive moments or moments you wanted to throw in the towel?
Yeah. When I first started my membership site, this was for my instructors. What I do is once they become certified, then they're part of this instructor platform called Crew, where I offer them continuing education. It's the technical side of things where I just want to throw in the towel. That is so hard because although you can set everything up right, there's always glitches. Always. that processing payments, integration with plugins. Oh, my lordy lord. Oh, so that's what I want to throw in the towel. When I was trying to make GetSharkey accredited, that was really, really, really hard. Now anybody can accredit their format. I mean, so much so that a representative had to come to one of my classes to see if it was fitness. So that was really hard, like just like writing out, you know, all the anatomy involved in each move and all that. I mean, now you don't have to do all that. It's easy. But yeah, so those are the two big moments where I thought, oh, this is just too hard. I'm going to throw in the towel.
Yeah. It's easy for a lot of us creatives to dream the dreams. The execution is the grind. And the fact that you even know the word plugins means that you have opened up your world to more than you could have ever imagined as a dancer.
That's right. That's right. You're so right.
So when you think about the dancers now who are entering, I mean, New York is still an amazing hub of dance. What are some pieces of advice that you would give them as they enter New York?
Don't give up. Talent is always found if you set up everything in place, meaning make sure you know the right people, constantly network. You've got to do the work, but you will be found. Your talent will be found, but do the work for it. Don't just sit back and relax and think they're going to come to you. Make yourself seen. Go to as many conferences or classes as you can. Yeah, just set yourself up to be found.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You had mentioned that you actually stopped going to classes, that you lost your mojo.
Yes.
I remember losing my mojo. I remember very clearly dragging my bum to class or not going and then feeling guilty about it all the days. For you, what would you tell somebody now who is struggling with their mojo, who is losing hope, who maybe doesn't feel like they're finding the right classes, the right teachers, the right tribe, whatever that is? What would you say to them?
Try something new that always works. Like, for example, in my business, where I'm losing mojo to sit in front of the computer, write my emails, any copy that I need to write, or even choreograph some classes. I just have to take myself out of where I usually go, go to a studio, go work at Starbucks, just be in a different place. Or I get a lot of inspiration by just taking a different type of class or even taking yoga. So that would be my suggestion. Who knows what could come from it, you know? If you take a different genre of class, you may fall in love with it. And then you might spark an idea of a business.
Who knows? A national curriculum.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is it with belly dance for you that changed your world? You've mentioned that it was about loving your body and that you felt like it's where you belonged. You know, you like fit the part. It was.
Yeah.
Home in a lot of respects. But even on a broader level, what is it about it that you've made your life about it? You know, entrepreneurs know that their business is their life. There's very little separation between the two.
Well, there's a lot of things. I really love what belly dance is about and why it was created. You know, it's a fertility dance. And it's a dance for women by women. And I absolutely love that. And it was about to show another woman what it feels like to be a woman through dance and not saying it. So that I love. And I love defying the myth to people what belly dance is about when they're like, oh, is that what it's about? It's about fertility. I'm like, yeah, it makes them want to come and experience it. So that's one thing. Another reason why I really love belly dance is because I love educating people about where it's from and who actually belly dances. I mean, anybody can belly dance, but I like to let them know that it's not something that's a Muslim thing. People think that you have to be Muslim to belly dance. I'm in fact Jewish and of Arabic descent, and that boggles their mind. And like, there's Christians of Arabic descent that's part of their culture, Muslims of Arabic descent, you know, I mean, but I love how belly dance is about inclusivity, you know, too. It's just about women, you know, and when we're together, I love educating them about that. And along with loving your body. And in fact, having a curvaceous figure looks great when you're doing it. Having a little bit more on your tummy while you're rolling your spine looks absolutely beautiful when you're doing it, you know? So yeah, that's why I still do it.
You had mentioned in our previous conversation that you really got connected in with the Alvin Ailey studio or dancers at the time because they looked more like you and they were closer to what you imagined yourself doing. Did you ever go after the Alvin Ailey company? Was that ever something that you actually pursued knowing that you could see yourself sort of fitting in there?
Yes, I actually took classes at Alvin Ailey at the old studio when it was on 60th Street. Yes, and I was prepared to go onto that track to hope to audition potentially for the Alvin Ailey 2 company. I took a lot of Horton classes. I loved Horton. I took a lot of Dunham classes there, ballet classes. Yeah, just I felt good in my body. It was a strong technique there. I loved it. You know, but then when I lost my mojo, that's when I went into fitness more. But, you know, I had this, what do you call that? Those dream boards?
Oh, like a vision board?
Oh, a vision board. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And I had Ailey, the Ailey name. I had Oprah Winfrey on it. And I had $250,000 on my written on my vision board. And then one day, you know, I said, you know what? You know, I'm currently fusing my contemporary style into my performance belly dance style. And like, I would love to teach the Ailey company some belly dance. Just give them some ideas. Just to do a class, a professional class with them. And that's when, at that time, I think it was in 2006, they created the public extension for the Ailey School, where the public can come and now take classes, but which is kind of different. It's like the public that take class at Ailey, they already have some dance under their belt. You know, they're not just your regular Joe Schmo coming off the street. And I said, you know what? I'm going to call them. I'm going to see if they want a class there. Of course, it's not a professional class, but for the extension. And I went in, I showed them, I gave them an audition and they loved it, you know? And I was teaching about a month later and I'm still there. I've been there for almost 15 years teaching at the Ailey Extension. And although, you know, I was just so proud of myself, you know, I was so into the whole hoopla, like being a great teacher. You know, at times the Ailey 2 members would come in and take class, you know, again, you know, they're thinking out of the box, probably trying to get their mojo back, you know, who knows? But one day when I was teaching, it was like 2 years ago, I was about ready to go teach a master class. I was teaching a choreography class at Ailey. And I sat at a Mexican restaurant, catty corner to Alvin Ailey, where it is now. And I just bawled. And I'm like, the waiter must have been like, what the heck is this lady crying about? But it just hit me like, although I've always wanted to dance for the Alvin Ailey company, here I am teaching and their establishment. But, you know, I kind of got in an indirect way, the teaching way. And here I am always wanting to be a dancer, in which I'm dancing now and I haven't danced. I've been dancing more than ever in my later years now. But here I am like a teacher. I've never wanted to be a teacher, but I'm teaching and I'm loving it. And I didn't realize being a teacher is really up there. You know, I thought being a dancer was up there, being on stage. But you know what? It's the teacher. It's mentoring people and getting people to that level. I totally flipped it in my head for so many years that teaching is not the way to go, or it's the kind of.
It's your plan B. It's the second.
It's my plan B, right? I couldn't get it out.
Yeah. It's the second career. It's the whatever that is. Yeah.
Here I am now leading 100 instructors, teaching master classes at Ailey, teaching around the world, I mean, and nationally. And I was like, God damn, it just hit me. I was like, I'm proud of myself. I did it. Yes. And all by myself, you know, I felt like I didn't need a name to get me there. I did it all by myself with drive and not giving up.
So where can people find more about Sharqi? And what does Sharqi mean?
Oh, Sharqi means east in Arabic. So the technical term for belly dance is Raqs al-Sharqi. And so I just took the Sharkey because when I created it, it was back when Taibo was really hot. So, and that was a two-syllable word. And I figured, why not Sharkey? So that's why.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that worked. And it's just easy. It rolls off the tongue. It's just, yeah. So that's what it means.
And so where can people find that? Or if they're curious and wanted to try something, what would you recommend for them?
So my website is sharkey.com. It's SHARQUI.com. If you want to find out about what it is, where to take a class. And I also, if I may, I have a gift for your listeners.
Hey-o.
If you always wanted to try out belly dance fitness, and it is authentic moves, but just kicked up a notch in a fitness format, I have a gift for you guys. Just go to sharkey.com/thedancepodcast.
Amazing. Thank you. Okay. You know, I'm going to be trying that in my basement.
Cool. It's a free 30-minute digital video along with choreography notes.
Awesome. Oh, that is so great. Oh, well, thank you so much, Orit. This has been so fantastic.
My pleasure. And I'm honored to be on this podcast. Really, you don't know how much I'm honored. Thank you.
What do you do with your negative chatter? What are those thoughts that keep showing up that aren't serving you, that you keep hitting away and swatting away like a fly and somehow they just keep coming back? That is my invitation to you this week, is to become aware of what those chatters are and then what you do with them. Challenge them. So much of the time, those negative thoughts are just simply not true. Come on over to Instagram and share under Orit's photo what you do to quiet the negative chatter in your own brain, because we all go through it. There are so many times where we're feeling like we're not fitting in a certain box, or that we don't fit the trend, or that something that we can't change about ourselves is working against us. I know for me, I can make up stories in my head about how I'm not good enough, or I don't belong, or I'm not where I should be yet. And I mean, I can have a whole conversation with myself and beat myself up pretty good. But on the flip side, we also control that and become our own cheerleaders. One of the best things my psychologist had me do was to make a list of my negative thoughts in the left-hand side of a page. And then on the right-hand side of the page, write down the rational thought and the rational response. So often these negative thoughts are extreme, they're not true, they're blown out of proportion. And when you actually come back to a more grounded state and look at the thought, it just sheds light on something that is so dark and so unnecessary and often so much bigger than what it deserves to be. I hope this interview has inspired you to explore new things, to trust in your creativity and our entrepreneurial spirits. If you want to make something, go for it, do it, learn along the way. Just take action now and trust that your dance career, or your career, whatever that is always opening up opportunities if you're willing to work hard and just step into them. You can always find us at thedancepodcast.com or on Instagram at thedancepodcast. I love hearing from you. I love getting your emails. Please, please, please keep sending them. They inspire me to keep going and to reach out and bring these amazing experts to you. Every share of every episode helps us spread the word within this dance community. Please head over to iTunes, hit subscribe, give us a rating, and I hope you have a wonderful week. I'll see you next Wednesday.